Patkin, all dead. Cowardy Zachary'll live on and regret'll flay him till his dying day. On the other side, you got just one dead offlander no one'll miss. Four you love, gainst one you don't. I may even magic Adam back from Kona. No bolt hole out of this. Marinim had to die. Yea, no bolt hole, boy. I'm counting to five. I got my blade. A seed sprouted through the crust of my memory, and that seed was a word Georgie'd speak just then. Augurin. Quick sharp, I chucked my blade down after my spiker and looked that devil in his terrorsome eyes. He'd got the spriest curio, and his dying smile'd got a bucket of dark meanings. I spat at him, but my spit boomeranged back on me. Why? Was I crazed in Lunan? Old Georgie had made a diresome mistake, see? He memoried me of my augurins from my dreamin' night. Hands are burning. Let that rope be not cut. My deciding was settled, see? My hands was burning. So this was that rope, so'n me'd say-so'd me not to cut. My blade chimed on the ground, and time started, and the million hands and screams of that devil's blizzard tore and pummeled me, but couldn't hurl me off the closure wall. Nay, somehow, I pulled up Marinim and got us down the other side, too, with no bones busted. We leaned against the fury and white and dark snowstorm back to the Strondmer's village. We staggered and tripped and got back more freezing and living, but a dry faggot was waiting by Sonny's grace, and I somehow got a fire crackling, and I vow that fire saved our lives all over again. We boiled ice to water and unfroze our bones and dried our furs best we could. We didn't speak none. We was too icy and drained. Did I regret spurning old Georgie? Nay, not then, not now. Whatever Marinim's cause was for scaling this cussed mountain, I didn't believe she'd ever Judas no valleysman, nay, not in my heart. And the Kona'd a done to the valleys what happened sooner or later anyhow. That was in the future that first night from the summit. My friend gived us both medicine pills after grinds, and we sleeped the no-dream sleep of the Strondmer King. Now getting back to the valleys weren't no summery stroll neither, nay, but tonight ain't the time to yarn them ventures. Marinim and me didn't talk much going down, a sort of trust and unstand and tied us now. Mount Achaia had done its cussed best to kill us, but we survived it together. I cogged she was far, far from her own family and kin, and my heart ached for her lonesomeness. Abel welcomed us in his garrison dwelling 3 evenings later and sent word to Bailey's we'd come back. Everyone had got just one question. What did you see up there? It was lonesome and hushly, I told him, with temples o' lost smart and bones. But I didn't breathe a word about the Strondmer King nor what Marinim had told me about the fall, and especially not my knuckly with old Georgie. Nay, not till years had come and gone. I understanded why Marinim had not said the whole true about Prescience Isle and her tribe, too. People believe the world is built so, and tell 'em it ain't so, caves the roofs on their heads and maybe yours. Old Ma Yibber spread the news that the Zachary what came down off Mount Achaia weren't the same Zachary what had gone up, and true enough, I suppose, there ain't no journey what don't change you some. My cuz Cobbery fessed that ma's and pa's through the nine valleys was warning their daughters against frolicking with Zachary O'Bailey's, cause they reckon I must have businessed with old Georgie to escape that shrieky place with my soul still in my skull. And though that weren't the whole true, and weren't the whole wrong, Jonas and Susie didn't mick with me like they once did. But Ma got weepy to see us home and hugged me. My little Zacka man. And my goats was gladsome, and Catkin didn't change none. She and her bros at the school read made a new game, Zachary and Marinim on Mount Achaia. But Abba say so them not to, cause times are, pretendin' can bend bein'. A wool game it was, said Catkin, but I didn't want to know its rules, nor endin'. By and by Marinim's last moon in Nine Valleys swelled up, and time it was for the Honoka a barter, the biggest gathering of windward peoples. Just once a year it come round under the harvest moon, so for many days we was hard at work, looming goat wool blankies what was our dwellin's bestest barterin'. Now since my pa's killin', we'd trekked to Honoka'a in groups of 10 or more, but that year there was twice that number, cause of the spesh prescient loot we'd got, thanks to us hostin' Marinim. There was handcarts and pack mules for all the dried meat and leather and cheese and wool. Wimoway and Roses was going to trade herbs what didn't grow near the valleys, though Roses and Cobbery was spoonying by then, and that was fine by me. I wished my cuz luck, cause luck he'd need, and a whip and iron back and all. Crossin' sluices crossin', I'd to bear watchin' journeyers put fresh stones on Pa's mound. So our custom was, my pa'd got a bucket of friends and bros what loved him truesome. Up on Mount Achaia, that devil was sharpening his nails on a whetstone to feast on this cowardly liar, yeah? After sluices came the zigzag up to Kuikuihaele. One handcart busted and tipped, so slow and thirstsome going it was, yeah. Noon was long gone before we reached the scraggy hamlet sitting up the far side. Us young'uns shimmed the coconut trees for grinds, and everyone welcomed that milk, no frettin'. Trampin' southly, the buckin' olden way toward Honoka'a town, the ocean breeze turned freshly, and our spirits was mended, so we telled yarnies to shrink the miles, with the yarner sitting backwards on the leadin' ass so everyone could hear. Roderick yarned the tale of Rudolph, the red-ringed goat thief, and Iron Billy's hideous spiker, and Wolt sang a spoony song, O Sally of the Valleys, O. Though we pelted him with sticks, cause his singin' busted that lilsome tune. Then Unc Bees asked Marinim to teach us a prescient yarny. She hesitated a beat or two, and said prescient's tales was drippin' with regret and loss, and not good augurin' for a sunny afternoon before barter day. But she could tell us a yarn what she'd heard from a burntlander in a far, far spot named Panama. We all yeasayed, so up she sat on the lead ass, and a short and sweet yarn she spoke, what I'll tell you now, so all you shut up, sit still, and someone fetch me a fresh cup of spirit brew, my throat's gluey and parched. Back when the fall was fallen, humans forgot the making of fire. Oh, dire some bad things was getting, yeah. Come night, folks couldn't see nothing. Come winter, they couldn't warm nothing. Come morning, they couldn't roast nothing. So the tribe went to Wise Man and asked, Wise Man, help us. See, we forgot the making of fire, and oh, woe is us and all. So Wise Man summoned Crow and say-so'd him these words, Fly across the crazed and Jiffian ocean to the mighty volcano, and on its foresty slopes find a long stick. Pick up that stick in your beak and fly into that mighty volcano's mouth and dip it in the lake of flames what bubble and spit in that fiery place. Then bring the burning stick back here to Panama so humans will memory fire once more and memory back its making. Crow obeyed the wise man say-so, and flew over this crazed and Jiffian ocean till he saw the mighty volcano smoking in the near far. He spiraled down onto its foresty slopes, nibbed some gooseberries, gulped of a chilly spring, rested his tired wings a beat, then civvied round for a long stick of pine. A one, a two, a three, and up Crow flew, stick in his beak, and plop! Down the soul-free mouth of the mighty volcano that gutsy bird dropped, yeah, swooping out of his dive at the last beat, dragging that stick of pine through the melty fire. Whoosh! It flamed. Up and out of that, Crow flew from the scorching mouth. Now flew with that burning stick in his mouth, yeah, toward home he headed, wings poundin', stick burnin', days passin', hail slingin', clouds blackenin', oh, fire lickin' up that stick, eyes smokin', feathers crispin', beak burnin'. It hurts, Crow cried. It hurts. Now, did he drop that stick or didn't he? Do we memory them making a fire or don't we? See now, said Marinim, riding backwards on that lead ass. It ain't about crows or fire. It's about how we humans got our spirit. I don't say that yarn's got a whole sack of sense, but I always memoried it, and times are less sense is more sense. Anyhow, the day was dying in soddy clouds, and we was still some miles shy of Honoka'a, so we tented up for the night and throwed dice for watch, see? Times was bad, and we didn't want to risk no ambush. I got a 6 and 6, so maybe my luck was healing. So I thinked, full of fate what I am, yeah, what we all are. Honoka'a was a bustliest town a nor'east windward, see? Olden's builded it high enough to survive the rising ocean, not like half a Hilo, nor Kona neither, what was flooded most moons. Honoka'a men was traders and makers mostly. Oh, they worshipped Sonmi, but they divvied their chances slywise and worshipped Hilo gods too, so we valley's men reckoned them half savages. Their chief was called Senator. He'd got more power in our abbess, yeah. He'd got an army of 10, 15 knuckly men with woe spikers whose job was to force Senator say-so. And no one chose Senator, nay, it was a barbaric paw-to-sun business. Honoka'a was a fair midway for Hilo and Honomu folks, and Valley's men and Mu'ukini before they was slaved, and the Heel tribes up country. The town's olden walls was rebuilded fresh and blown off roofs mended over and over, but you could still strolly round its narrow and windy streets and imagine flying kayaks and no-horse carts wheeling here and there. Last there was the Bartrin Hall, a woe-spacey building what Abbess said was once named Church, where an ancient god was worshipped, but the knowing of that god was lost in the fall. Church had got strong walls and butesome colored glass and sat in a lushly green space with lots of stone slabs for pennin', sheeps and goats and pigs and all. During the barter, Senator's guards manned the town gates and storehouses, and they'd got a lockup, too, with iron bars. No army man never knucklied no traitor, though, not unless he thieved or busted peace or law. Honoka'a'd got more law than any place else on Big Isle, except the nine-folded valleys, I suppose. Though law and civilize ain't always the same, nay. See, Kona got Kona law, but they ain't got one flea of civilize. That Bartrin, we valleys men did a woe good trade for ourselves and the commons. 20 sacks of rice from the hill tribes we got for the prescient tarps, yeah, and cows and hides from Parker's ranch for the metalwork. We telled no one about Marinim being an offlander, nay, we named her Audrey O'Hermit Dwellin' from up Gooch Palulu Valley. Audrey was a herbalist and a lucky freak birth, we said, to splain her black skin and white tooths. The prescience gear, we said, was new salvage. We'd find it in a stashed hidey nick, though no one ever asks, so where'd you get this gear, and specs to hear a truesome answer. Old Ma Yibber keeps her slurry full mouth corked outside Nine Valleys, so when a story man named Lyons asked me if I was the same Zachary o' Elipayo Valley what climbed Mauna Kea last moon, I was diresome surprised. Yeah, said I, I'm Zachary o' that valley, but I don't hate this life so much I'd go anywhere near the roof of that mountain, nay. I said I'd gone hunting fresh leaves and roots with my last life Aunt Audrey, but we didn't go no higher'n where the trees stopped, nay, and if he'd heard different, well, I were here telling him he'd heard wrong. Lion's words was friendsome enough, but when my bro Harrit telled me he'd seen Lions and Beardy Leary muttering down a smoky dead end, I reckon I'd tell him to Abbess when we got home and see what she thinked. A rat's ass ting I'd always smelled coming off Leary, And I'd be finding in just a bunch of hours how, oh, how right I was. Miriam and me bartered off our goat wool spinnings and blankies and all pretty soon on, yeah? I got a sack of fine Manuka coffee, some plastic piping and fine Nick, fat oats and bags of raisins from a dark Coli Coli girl, and more gear too, what I don't memory now. Coli Coli folk ain't so savage, I reckon, though they bury their deadens beneath the same long houses where the living dwell, 'cause they believe they'll be less lonesome there. Then I helped with our commons barter for a beat or two, then strolled here and there, housed in with some traders from roundabouts. Savages ain't always bad folks, nay. I learned the Mackenzie'd men dreamed up a shark god and was sacrificing bladed and footless sheeps into their bay. Usual tales I heard, too, about Kona Rowdians, eastly of their normal hunting grounds, what shadowed all our hearts and minds. A crowd of watchers I finded gathering round someone, nestled near and seen Marinim, or Audrey, sitting on a stool and sketching people's faces, yeah. She bartered her sketchings for trinklety doodahs or a bite of grinds, and folks was gleesomer than anything, watching with amazement as their faces peered from nowhere onto paper, and more folks clustered saying, "Do me next, do me next." Folks asked her where she'd got that learning, and her answer was always, "It ain't learning, bro, just practice is all." Ugly she gived more beautsome than their faces got, but artists had done so all down history, so Audrey the sketchin' herbalist said. Yeah, when it came to faces, pretty lies was better than scabbin' true. Night fell and we tromped back to our stores and drawed lots for sentrying, then partying began in spesh dwellings named bars. I did my sentrying early on, then showed Marinim some places with Walt and Unc Bees before the musickers drawed us back to church. A squeezy wheezy and banjos and catfish fiddlers and a fresh rare steel guitar there was, and barrels of liquor what each tribe bring to show their richness, and sacks of blissweed, 'cause where there's Hilo, oh, there's blissweed. I skanked deep on Walt's pipe, and 4 days' march from our free windward to Kona leeward seemed like 4 million, yeah. Babby Bies of blissweed cradled me that night. Then the drumming started up. See, every tribe had its own drums. Fode, a lotus pond dwelling, and 2 or 3 valleysmen played goatskin and pingwood tom-toms, and Hilo beardies thumped their flumpy, flumpy drums, and a Honoka'a family beat their sash crangers, and Honomu folk got their shell shakers, and this woe feastin' of drums twanged the young'un's joystrings, and mine too, yeah, and blissweed'll lead you between the whack-crack and boom-doom and pan-pin-pon, till we dancers was hoofs thuddin' and blood pumpin' and years passin', and every drum beat one more life shedded off me, yeah. I glimpsed all the lives my soul ever was till far, far back before the fall, yeah. Glimpsed from a gallopin' horse in a hurricane, but I couldn't describe 'em, 'cause there ain't the words no more. But well I memory that dark Coli Coli girl with her tribe's tattoo, yeah. She was a saplin' bendin', and I was that hurricane. I blowed her, she bent. I blowed harder, she bent harder and closer. Then I was crow's wings beatin', and she was the flames lickin', and when the Coli Coli saplin' wrapped her willowy fingers around my neck, her eyes was quartzin', and she murmured in my ear, "Yeah, I will again, and yeah, we will again." "Get up now, boy," my pa biffed me anxum. "This ain't no morning for sluggy beddin', cuss you." That bubbly dream popped, and I waked proper under itchy Coli Coli blankies. The dark girl and me was twined, yeah, like a pair of oily lizards swallowing each other. She smelled of vines and lava ash, and her olive breasts rose and fell, and watching her I got the tenderlies, like she was my own babbitt slumbering by me. Blissweed was fogging me still, and I heard near-far shouts of wild partying, though a misty dawn was ready up, yeah. It happened so at harvest barterings times are. So I yawned and stretched, yeah, aching and feeling all good and scooped. You know how it is when you shoot up a butesome girl. Smoky Breckers was being cooked nearby, so I put on my pants and jacket and all, and the Coley Coley girl's eyes opened funny and she murmured, "Morning, goat man." And I laughed and said, "I'll be back with grinds." And she didn't believe me, so I settled I'd prove her wrong and see her smile when I bringed her brekker. Outside the Coley Coley storehouse was a cobbly track running by the town wall, but northly or southly I didn't cog. So I was puzzling my path there when a Honoka'a guard dropped from the rampart and missed killing me by inches. My guts shot half up and half down. A crossbolt shaft stuck out his nose and its point through the back of his head. Its iron point jolted that morning and everything into, oh, its horrorsome place. That near-far wild partying were battling and fighting, yeah. That smoking brekker was thatch-burning, yeah. Now my first thinking was my people, so I back-rabbited toward the valleysman's store in the town hub, shouting, "Kona! Kona!" Yeah, the dark wings of that dreadsome word beat furying through the Honoka'a, and I heard a thundery splintering and a diresome shout kicked up, and I cogged the town gate was busted down. Now I got to the square, but whack-a-boom panicking blocked my way in fear, yeah, fear and its hot stink turned me back. I roundabouted the narrow roads, but nearer and nearer Kona roars and horses and bullwhips came, filling them misty and burning alleys like a tsunami, and I didn't know what way I'd come nor was going, and kerbam! I got shoved into the gutter by a milk-eyed old ma, clubbing thin air with the roller pin, banshee-ing, "You'll never lay your filthsome hands on me!" But when I got up again, she was steel and pale. See, she'd got a crossbolt blossom in her bosom, and sudden-wise, whoa, a whip binded my legs together, and whoa, up I flew, and whoa, down my head dropped, and the pavestone smashed my skull, yeah? Fiercer than a chop from a cold, dammit chisel. When I waked next, my young body was an old bucket of pain, yeah? My knees was busted and one elbow stiff and bruised, and my ribs chipped and two teeth gone, and my jaws didn't fit no more, and that lump on my head was like a second head. I was hooded like a goat before slaughtering, and my hands and feet binded cruelsome and laid flat on and under other sorrysome bodies, yeah. I hurt like I never knowed before, nor since, nay. Cartwheels was groaning and iron shoes clip-clopping, and with each sway, pain sloshed round my skull. Well, there weren't no mystery. We was being slaved and carted back to Kona just like my lost bro Adam. I weren't specially gladsome at living still. I weren't nothing, just aching and helpless as a strung-up lard bird being bled from a hook. A squirming foot squashed my balls, so I murmured, "Anyin' else awake here?" See, I thinked I may yet manage to rabbit out of that hole, but a rook-raw Kona voice yelled just inches away, "Shut your mouths, my strapping lads, or I vow on my blade I'll slit the tongues from every last dingo shat one of you." A warm wet quilted my arm as someone lying on me pissed, what cooled to a chill wet as beats went by. I counted 5 Kona speaking, 3 horses and a cage of chicklins. Our slavers was discussing the girls what they'd torn open and shooted up during the Honoka'a raid, so I knowed I'd been hooded half the day or more. I didn't have no hungry, but oh, I was thirsty as hot ash. One of the Kona voices I cogged, but I didn't see how. Every long beat'd bring a thundering of war hoofs along the road, and there'd be a "How's it, Captain?" and a "Yea, sir," and "The battling goes well." And so I learned the Kona had not made just a Rekian raid on Honoka'a, but was sees in the whole a northly big eye, yeah, and that meant the valleys, my ninefolded valleys. Son me, I prayed, mercy some son me, minder my family and kin. Finally, sleep dragged me off, and I dreamed of the Coli Coli girl, but her breasts and flank was made of snow and lava rock, and when I waked in that cart again, I found a dyed slave under me was sucking all the warmness out of me. I shouted, "Hey, Kona, you got a dyed on here, and maybe your cart horse'd thank you to lose some dragon heavy." A boy on top of me yelped as the Kona driver whip-flicked him to reward him for my oh-so-kindly consideration. He was the pisser, maybe. I knowed by the bird's lilts evening was near, yeah, and all day we'd been carted. A long beat later we stopped, and off that cart I was hauled and pricked by a spiker. I yelled and wriggled, heard a Kona say, "This un's still living anyhow," and was lifted off and leaned against a hut-sized rock, and after a beat my hood was taken off. I sat up and squinted in the mournsome dim. We was on the drizzly Waimea track, and I caught exactly where, yeah, see it was by the sloping pond, and that hut-sized rock we was leaned against was the self-same rock where Marinim and me'd meeted old Yanagi just a moon ago. Now I watched the Kona sling away three dyed slaves for the dingoes and ravens, and I knowed why I cogged a familiar voice before. See, one of our capturers was Lyons the Storyman, Bro O'Leary. Storyman and spire, may old Georgie cuss his bones. There was no valleys men set me in the surviving ten, nay, mostly Honomu and Hawaii, I reckoned. I prayed one of the slinged three wasn't Cobry, my cuz. All of us was young men, yeah? So they'd killed the older uns back in Honoka'a, I s'posed. Marrying him too, I reckoned, 'cause I knowed she couldn't survive nor escape such a fury and attack. One of the Kona poured a slug of pond water on our faces. We opened our mouths for every brackish drop, but it weren't enough to damp our parching. The chief say-so'd their horse boy to tent up, and then spoke to his trembly catches. "Since this morning," said the painted bugger, "your lives, yeah, your bodies are Kona belongings, and the sooner you accept this, the likelier you'll survive as a slave of the true inheritors of Big Eye, and one day whole Hawaii." Chief told us our new lives had got new rules, but luckily the rules was easy learning. First rule is, slaves do your Kona masters say so, quick sharp, and no butt whyin'. Bust this rule and your master'll bust you a bit, or a lot, depends on his will, till you learn better obeyin'. Second rule is, slaves don't speak except when your master asks 'em. Bust this rule and your master'll slit your tongue, and I will too. Third rule is, you don't waste no time plotting scapes. When you're sold next moon, you'll be branded on your cheeks with your master's mark. You'll never pass for pure blood Kona, 'cause you ain't. True be telled, all windwards are freak birth shits. Bust this rule, and I vow it. When you're catched, your master'll blade off your hands and feet, blade off your cock to gag your mouth, and leave you by the wayside for the flies and rats feasting. Sounds like a quick death, you may think, but I done it several times, and spry's and slowsome it is, believe me. Chief said all good masters kill a bad or idling slave now and then to memory the others what happens to slackers. Last, he asked if there was any complainers. No complainers there weren't, nay. Us peaceful windward men was busted in body by wounds and thirst and hunger, and busted in spirit by the killing we'd seen and the slaved future we seen before us. No family, no freeness, no nothing but work and pain and work and pain till we died. And where'd our souls be rebirthed then? I wondered if I may meet Adam, or if he was died ready or what. An Elfie Hawaii boy started blubbing some, but he was just a niner or a tenner, so no one hissed him to shut up. In fact, he shedded tears for all of us, yeah? Jonas would be slaved most probably, and Susie and Catkin too. But they was grim thinking, see? Both was pretty enough girls. Ma was an aging woman, though. What use did the Kona find for her? I didn't want to think about the roller pin woman in Honoka'a who'd walked me into the ditch, but I couldn't stop myself. Lions came over, said boo to the elfy boy, so he blubbed badder, and Lions laughed, then yanked off my prescient boots. He admired him on his own feet. No more scavin' up Mauna Kea for Zachary Goat Boy, that Judicer speaked. So he won't be needin' these no more, nay. I didn't say nothin', but Lions didn't like the way I didn't say nothin'. So he kicked my head and groin with my own boots. I weren't sure, but I reckon he was second in charge after Chief, leastways none challenged him for my boots. Night dripped, and the Kona roasted chicklins over the fire, and any of us had bartered our souls for a drip of that chicklin grease on our tongues. We was getting chill now, and though the Kona didn't want us too busted before the slave market, they wanted us kept puny and frail, 'cause we was 10 but they was only 5. They opened a cask of liquor, and drank some more, and tore them delish-smelling chicklins, and drank some more. They murmured a bit and looked at us. Then a Kona was sent over to us with a torchin' stick. He held it by each of us while his tribesmen crowed, yay or nay. Finally, he unbinded the elfy Hawaii's feet and sported him hobbling over to the campfire. There they warmed him and fed him some chicklin and liquor. Us forgotten slaves was being drained by hunger and pain and the mozzies from the sloping pond now, and we was envying that Hawaii boy diresome, till at a nod from Lions, they ripped down Elfie's pants and held him and busted that boy's ring, oiling his hole up with lardbird fat between turns. Lions was pokering the sorrysome child when I heard a kiss noise, and he just keeled over. The other 4 bust laughing. See, they believe Lions was bladdered with liquor, but then kss, kss, and 2 red spots grew between another Kona's eyes, and he dropped stone dead, too. A helmeted and caped Kona strided into the clearing, holding a sort of shin bone what he pointed at our last 3 catchers. Another kss, and the boy Kona was felled. Now the chief grabbed his spiker and hurled it at the helmeted killer, who dived and sort of rolled across the clearing so the spiker tore his cloak but missed his body. A kss tore a sloping gash across the chief's torso, and he sort of slid into 2 halves. Hope creeped up on my shock, but crack! The last Kona's bullwhip wrapped round that lethal killing shinbone, and crack! That shooter quick sharped out of the rescuer's hands and into our catcher's hands like a magic-y. Now the last Kona swivied the weapon at our rescuer and approached close so he couldn't miss, and I seen his hand squeeze its trigger, and kss! The last Kona's head was missing, and the breadfruit tree what had stood behind him was a whoosh, a cindery flamin's crackling and steaming in the rain. His body stood lonesome for a beat, like a babbit learning to walk. Then, dumpf! See, he'd errored the shooter's mouth for its ass and flash-banged his own head off. Our mystery Kona rescuer sat up, rubbing elbows tendersome, plucked off his helmet, and stared miserably at the 5 Didons. I'm too old for this, Marinum said, grim and frowning. We unbinded the other slaves and let him have the Kona's grinds. Marinim had got enough for us in her horse's saddlebags, and them unslaved buggers needed all the help they could get. All we took from the dyed 5 was my boots back off Lion's foots. In war, Marinim teached me, first you angst about your boots, only second, you angst about grinds and all. My rescuer give me her full yarn a long beat later in this old and ruin and trackless bush on the leeward Kohala's what we've found and lit a small fire. It ain't long in the yarnin', nay. Marinim weren't in the valleysman's store when the Kona attacked Honoka'a. Nay, she was up on the town walls sketching the sea till a torch and crossbolt kicked that sketchbook out of her hands. She got back to the valleysman's store before the town gate was down, but Unc' B shouted her I was missing, so she went off looking, and that was the last she seen of my kin. Her horse and helmet she'd got from a Kona chief who'd charged down an alley and didn't charge out no more. In Kona gear and riotsome anarchy, Marinim bluffed away out of the bloodshot and torching town. There weren't no battling, nay, it was just more a roundup, see? The senator's armies rendered faster than anyone. Marinim first righted northly valleywards, but Kona was gathering thick round Kuikui Haele for their swarm into the valleys, so she'd turn inland along the Waimea track, but that road was thickly sentried, and she couldn't pass for Kona if stopped. Marinim turned southly, reckoning to reach Hilo and see if it was still in freesome hands. But Sonmi stayed her for long enough to glance a cart trundling by, and sticking out of that cart was 2 feet, and on those 2 feet was prescient boots, and only one windwardsman she knowed that weared prescient boots. She daren't try to rescue me in daylight, and one time she lost the cart 'cause she roundabouted a platoon of horses, and if it weren't for the Kona's blattery chorusin' as they googad the Hawaii boy, she might have missed us in the dark and ridden by. Oh, the risk she'd taken to rescue me. "Why didn't you hide and save your skin proper?" asked I. She made a stupid question face. "Yeah, but what did we do?" My thinking was stormin' and fearin'. The valleys is raided and burnin', probably. And if Hilo ain't fallen yet, it'll fall soon. My friend just tended my wounds and hurtins with bandagins and stuff, then raised a cup and medicine stone to my lips. "This'll help fix your busted body, Zachary. Shut up your yibberin' and sleep now." A murmuring man woke me in a leaky olden shelter with leaves busting through the window holes. I was aching in a dozen places, but not painin' so sharply. Morning was brisk and leeward smellin', but I memoried the desperate new age what was shadowin' windward, and oh, in my head I groaned to be wakin'. Across the room Marinim was speakin' through her orison to that sternsome prescient what had catched me civvyin' through Marinim's gear that first time. I gazed on for a beat, marvelin' once more. See, colors are spicier and brighter in orison windows. Soon he seen me risin' and cocked me with a raise of his head. Marinim turned to and houseted. "Better'n yesterday." I stepped over to see that spesh smart. My joints and bones groaned some. Marinim said I'd ready met this prescient, what she said was named Duophysite, and I said I'd not forgotten 'cause he'd been so scarysome. The windowed prescient was listening to us, and his skeletony face softened just one shade. "Oh, I wish we wasn't meeting in such dark times, Zachary," said Duophysite. "But I'm asking you to guide Marinim on one last trek, to Iket's Finger. You know it?" "Yeah, I knowed it. Northly from the last valley over Palolu Bridge, a long spit of land what pointed northeastly. Was the ship anchoring for Marinim at Iket's Finger?" The two prescients bartered a glance, and Duophysite spoke after a beat. "We got bad news of our own to teach you, sorrysome to say. The orisons on prescience and the ship ain't answered no transmission for days and days." "What's a transmission?" I asked. "A message," said Marinim. "A window, an orison gathering like we was discussing with the Duophysite now." I asked, "Are the orisons busted?" "Way worser it may be," speaked the window then. "See, in recent moons a plague's neared Prescience Isle, westly from Anchorage, yeah, a tiresome sick what our smart can't cure. Just 1 in 200 what catch this plague survive it, yeah. Us prescients on Hawaii, we got to act like we're on our own now, because the ship probably ain't coming. But what about Anafi, Miriam's son? Miriam's face made me wish I'd bit my tongue off before I'd asked. I got to live with not knowing, said my friend, so bleaksome I could have blubbed. I ain't the first one who lives so, and I ain't the last neither. Well, that yibber busted a hope in me what I'd not cogged I'd got. I asked Duophysite how many prescients was there on whole Hawaii. 5, answered the man. 500? I asked. Duophysite seen my dismay and knowed it too. Nay, just 5. One on each main eye of the chain. Our whole true is simply tell, and it's time now you knowed it. We angst this plague had reached prescience and snuff out civilize's last bright light. We was searching for good earth to plant more civilize in Hawaii, and we didn't want to scare you islandmen by big numbers of offlanders. So you see, spoke Miriam now, your fears about my true aims and all wasn't total wrong. I didn't care about that no more. I said if prescience was like Miriam, yeah, 5,000 of them had been welcome in the valleys. Duophysite darkened, thinking how few prescients might be living now. The boss of my tribe here on Maui, where I'm speaking to you from, is a friendsome leader, same as your abbess. He say so 2 war kayaks to cross the Maui Straits would'll be at Aiket's finger come noon the day after morrow. I vowed him I'd get Miriam safe there by then. Then I can thank you for helping her in person. Duophysite plussed there'd be space on them kayaks if I wanted to scape off Big Eye with her. That settled my mind. Thank you, I tell the stranded prescient. But I got to stay and find my family. We stayed hid in that ruin one more night for my muscles to knit and my bruising to heal. Heart buggerin', it was not rushing back to the valleys for battling or wreckin'. But Miriam seen the Kona horses and crossbowmen pouring toward the valleys via Kui Kui Haele, and she assured me there'd not have been no dragged battling for 9 valleys, yeah, it had all have been over in hours, not days, nay. Bleaksome and haunted day it was. Miriam teach me how to use that spec shin bony shooter. We practiced on pineapples, then giant burrs, then acorns till my aim was sharp. I sentried while Miriam slept, then she sentried while I sleep some more. Soon our fire was dirty in twilight mist again, and we dined on Kona rations of salt buttons and seaweed, and lilikoi fruits what growed in that ruin. I filled the horse's oat bag and petted him and named him Walt, 'cause he was as ugly as my cuz. Then gloomed hurtsome, wondering who of my kin was still living. True be told, not knowing the worst, is badder in knowing it. A flutter by thinking touched me, and I asked Miriam why a shipwoman rode horses as good as any Kona. She fessed most prescients couldn't ride no animal, but she'd lived with the tribe called the Swaneki that lived way past Anchorage and way past Far Couver. The Swaneki bred horses like valleys men bred goats, yeah, and their little ones could ride before they could walk, and she'd learnt during her seasons with them. Miriam teach me lots about the tribes she'd lived amongst, but I ain't got time for those yarns now. Nay, it's getting late. We speak about the morrow's route to Aiket's finger. See, one way was to follow the Kohala's razorback over 9 valleys, but another way was to follow Waipio River down to Abel's garrison first and spy what we'd spy. We didn't know, see, if the Kona'd slashed and burned then emptied the valleys like they'd done the Mu'ukini, or if they was aiming to conquer and settle our dwellings and slave us in our own lands. Now I vowed to get Miriam to Aiket's finger safe and sound, and reckon about Kona horsemen weren't safe nor sound. But Miriam say so'd we'd spy the valleys first, and so the morrow's way was settled. Dawn fogged waxy and silty. It weren't easy getting the horse over the Kohala Ridge and thickets to Waipio Spring, not knowing if a Kona platoon was waiting through the walls of cane we was noisomely hacking. Mostly we'd to walk and lead the beast, but we reached the spring finally by noon, and tethered him in a hollow up-gulch and creeped the mile to Abel's long the spruce spur. Fog turned every tree stump into a huddled cone of sentry, but still I was thanksome to Sonmi for the camo. We spied over the Piran lip and looked down on the garrison. Grim viewin', ya. Only Abel's gate stood shut. See, the walls and outbuildings was all charred and busted. A naked man was hanged off the gate bar, yeah, by his ankles in the cone away. Maybe it were Abel, and maybe it weren't. But Crows was ready mining his guts, and a pair of ballsy dingoes scavenged dropped slops. Now as we watched, a 30-40 head roundup of slaved valleysmen was being shunted out to Kui Kui Haele. I memory that sight till my dying day and longer. Some was mulin' carts of loot and gear. Kona shouts and say-sos ruckused and whips crackled. The fog was too swampy for me to make out my tribesmen's faces, but oh, sorry some was their figures draggling out toward Slusha's crossing. Ghosts. Living ghosts. Watch the fate of the last civilized tribe with a big eye, think I. Yeah, the result of our school reenactory, just slaved for Kona fields and dwellings and stables and beds and holes in leeward ground. What could I do? Rush 'em? Some 20 Kona horsemen was convoying 'em off the leeward. Even with Marinim's shooter, I could maybe take out 5 of the 20 sentries, maybe more if I got lucky. But then what? The Kona'd spiker every valleysman to death at the first whip of Nucklian. This weren't Zachary the cowardry Nucklian Zachary the brave. Nay, it was Zachary the suicider Nucklian Zachary the survivor. And I ain't got no shame to say which Zachary victoried. To Marinim I signaled we was retreating back to the horse, though tears was in my eyes. Short ask, get me a roasted taro. Memory and that despair is hollowing me out. Now backtracking up to the Kohala grazing pastures, the mist slid below us, and southly rose Mauna Kea from that ocean of cloud, clear and close enough to spit at, so it seemed. So I did, yeah? I spit it hard. My soul may be stone and my luck may be rotted, but I can still cuss a cuss. From each of the 9-folded valleys, black cobras of smoke was rising, and every carrion winger and legger on Big Eye was crocking and feasting in our valleys that morning, I reckoned. Up in the pastures we finded goats scattered, some of mine, some from Kaima. But we didn't see not one goat herd, nay. I milked some, and we drank the last free valleysman's goat milk. Through Vertbury Pass we down toward Thumb Rock, where Marinim had sketched her map 5 moons before, yeah? Over the heathery turf what had cupped roses under me 6 moons before. Sun steamed the mist and dew away, and through a fine-weaved rainbow I seen the schoolry was raised, yeah? Just a black shell now, the last books and the last clock. Down we rode to Elipayo Stream, where I got off and Marinim helmeted up and loosely roped my hands, so if we was spied it'd look like she'd slaved escape runway, and maybe win us a lethal beat. Down the track we walked this way to Clooney's, what was the highest dwelling up gulch. Marinim dismounted and gripped her shooter as we creeped hushly as mouses through the buildings, but my heart weren't hushly, nay. A big knuckly had happened there, and gear was crashed and busted, but no bodies was lying round, nay. We'd take to some fresh grinds for the journey ahead. I knowed Clooney'd not a minded. Leaving Clooney's front gate, I spied a coconut spikered on a stained pole with flies buzzing, what was weird and unnatural, so we peered closer, and it weren't no coconut. Nay, it was Maka Clooney's head, yeah, with his pipe still poked in his mouth. Such barbaric buggers are them painted Kona bros. You trust one once, you're a dead man, believe me. Maka's head give me fury and nervies as we trekked further down to Bailey's dwelling. A pail of curdling goat milk stood in the milkery, and I couldn't stop imagining Susie being dragged away from that up-busted milking stool and what had been done to her. Oh, my poor and sweet and dear sis. A posse of hoofs stamped the yard mud. Goats was all shooed away, our chicklins thieved. So hush. No loom clacking, no catkin singing, no Jonas making nothing. The stream and a laughing thrush in the eaves and nothing else. No whoresome sight on the gatepost, I think sonned me for that much. Inside eggs and apricocks was spilled from the upturned table. Every room I was dreading what I'd find. But, nay, by the grace o' sonned me, it seemed my family had not been slayed yet. Guilt and sorrow whacked me. Guilt, 'cause I always survived and escaped, despite my dirtsome and stony soul. Sorrow, 'cause the ruins of my busted old life was strewed here and there and everywhere. Jonas's toys, what Pa'd whittled years ago. Ma's loomwork hanging in the doorways, swaying in the last of summer soft breathing. Burnt fish and blissweed hanged in the air. Catkin's writing work for schoolry still lied on the table where she was working. Didn't know what to think or say or what. What do I do? I asked my friend as I asked me. What do I do? Marinum sat on a wood box Jonas had made, what Maud called his first masterwork. A bleaksome and dark choice to settle, Zachary, she replied. Stay in the valleys till you're slaved. Escape the Hilo and stay till the Kona attack and be killed or slaved. Live in backwilds as a hermit bandit till you're catched. Cross the straits to Maui with me and probably never return to Big Eye no more. Yeah, that was my all choices, no frettin', but I couldn't settle one. All I knowed was that I didn't want to run away from Big Eye without vengeance in what had happened here. This ain't the safest place to sit and think, Zachary, said Marinim, so tendersome that finally my tears oozed out. Mounting the horse to leave back up Gulch, I memoried my family's icons in our shrine. Now if I left them there to be axed by and by for firewood, there'd be nothing to prove that Bailey's dwelling kin had ever existed. So back I ran alone to get 'em. Coming back down the passage, I heard crockery fall off the pantry shelf. I freezed. Slowsome, I turned and looked. A fat rat strutted there, stink-eyeing me and twitching its whiskery nose. Bet you're sorry and you didn't just cut that rope on the wall of my closure now, Zachary, yeah? All this woe and grief you could avoid it. I didn't listen to that liar's liar. The Kona had attacked anyhow, yeah, it weren't nothing to do with me defying that devilish bugger. I picked up a pot to hurl at old Georgie, but when I taked aim the fat rat had disappeared, yeah, and from the empty room to my left came a breezy sighing from the bed where I didn't see before. I should have just rabbited, yeah. I knowed it, but I didn't. I tippy-toed in and seen a Kona sentry lying there in a soft nest of blankies and skankin' deep on Mormon Valley blissweed. See, he'd been so sure us valleymen was all rolled over and enslaved that he'd blissed out, on duty. So here was the fearsome enemy. 1920 maybe he was. A vein pulsed in his Adam's apple that was left white between two lizardy tattoos. You found me, yeah? So slit me, wisped that throat. Blade me. My second augurin you'll be memorin', and yeah, so was I. Enemy sleeping, let his throat be not slit. This was the beat that augurin had foreseen, no frettin'. I say-so'd my hand and arm to do it, but they was locked in spring somehow. I'd been in knuckleys enough, who ain't, but I'd never killed none before. See, murderin' was forbidden by valleysman law, yeah? If you stole another's life, no one'd barter nothin' with you, nor see you, nor nothin', 'cause your soul was so poisoned you may give him a sickness. Anyhow, I stood there, by my own bed, my blade inches from that soft, pale throat. That laughin' thrush was yarnin' fast and loud. Bird lilt sound like blades bein' sharpened, I cogged for the first time there and then. I knowed why I shouldn't kill this Kona. It'd not give the valleys back to the valleysmen. It'd stony my cussed soul. If I'd been rebirthed a Kona in this life, he could be me and I'd be killin' myself. If Adam had been, say, adopted and made Kona, this'd be my brother I was killin'. Old Georgie wanted me to kill him. Weren't these reasons enough just to leave him be and hushly creep away? Nay, I answered my enemy, and I stroked my blade through his throat. Magic-y ruby welled and pumped and frothed on the fleece and puddled on the stone floor. I wiped my blade clean on the dead'un's shirt. I knowed I'd be paying for it by and by, but like I said a while back, in our busted world the right thing ain't always possible. Going out, I bumped Marinim rushing in. Kona, she hissed. There weren't no time to explain what I'd done in there and why. Hurrying, I stuffed my family's icons in the saddlebags, and she hoiked me on the horse. Coming up the track from Aunt Bees's was 3-4 horses clopping. Oh, we speeded out of Bailey's for the final time, like old Georgia was biting our asses. I heard men's voices behind and glanced back and even saw their armor glinting through the fig orchards, but by mercy some sown me, they didn't see us vanishing. One beat later, we heard a shrill conkins echo up the valley. Yeah, 3 blasts it was. And I knowed the Kona must have found that sentry I'd slayed and was sending an alarm out. Valley's men ain't all slaved or massacred. I knowed I'd be paying for ignoring the second auguring sooner and I'd gambled, yeah, and marrying him too. But our luck didn't yet wilt. Other Conkins answered the first, yeah, but they was down gulch and we galloped back through Vertbury Pass, Anxon, but we wasn't ambushed. One woe narrow escape it was, yeah, one more beat at my dwelling and them Kona horsemen had seen us and chased us. Avoiding the open Kohala Ridge and pastures, we skirted the forest for camo, and only then did I fess to Marinim what I'd done back to that sleeping sentry. I don't know why it is, but secrets just rot you like teeth if you don't yank 'em out. She just listened, yeah, and she didn't judge me none. I knowed a hid cave by Mauka Waterfall, and to here it was I took us for what'd be Marinim's final night on Big Isle if everything worked as planned. I'd hoped Walter Cobbery or another goat herd may escaped and be hiding there, but nay, it was empty. Just some blankies what we goat herd stashed for sleeping. The trade wind was giddy uppin', and I feared for the kayakers who'd be settin' out from Maui at dawn, but it weren't so chillsome, so I didn't risk no fire. Not so near the enemy, nay. I bathed my wounds in the pool, and Marinim bathed, and we ate the grinds I'd got from Clooney's and fig loaf what I grabbed from my own dwelling when I'd gone back for the icons. I couldn't stop memorying and yarning while we ate, nay, about my family and Pa and Adam, too. It was like if they lived in words, they couldn't die in body. I knowed I'd miss Marinim diresome when she was gone. See, I didn't have no other bro on Big Eye who weren't ready slaved. Lady Moon rose and gazed over my busted and butesome valleys with silvery and saurian eyes, and the dingoes mourned for the Didons. I wondered where'd my tribesmen's souls be reborn, now Valley's woman would not be Baron Babbitt's here. I wished Abbas was there to teach me, 'cause I couldn't say, and nor could Marinim. We prescience, she answered, after a beat. Belief when you die, and there ain't no coming back. But what about your soul? I asked. Prescience don't believe souls exist. But ain't dying tiresome cold if there ain't nothing after? Yeah. She sort of laughed, but not smiling, nay. Our truth is tiresome cold. Just that once, I sorry for her. Souls cross the skies of time, Abbas'd say, like clouds crossing skies of the world. Sonmi's the east and west. Sonmi's the map and the edges of the map, and beyonder the edges. The stars was lit, and I sentried first, but I knowed Marinem weren't sleeping. Nay, she was thinking and tossing under her blankie till she gived up and sat by me watching the moonlighted waterfall. Questions was mauseying me plaguesome. The fires of valleys